Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest live episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as Pretty Ugly, and the soon-to-be-released in August, The Japanese Vox. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, my co-hostess with the mostest, Allison Martine, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs Since September, Move on Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. Joining us today, all the way from her she shed in Toronto, is the one, the only, Samantha M. Bailey, author of Watch Out for Her, as well as other things, but Watch Out for Her is the book that Allison and I both co-buddy read this week. I was up late last night reading it. So welcome, Samantha.
Hello. Thank you. You guys can call me Sam. Thank you so much.
Perfect. Sam, tell our viewers and our listeners a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Watch Out for Her.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So
you can talk about your dog.
I did my doggy Jasper. So as you said, so I'm in Toronto. Born and raised here, but I've lived in different places, but I came back here. I have been writing since I was 10 years old, and I did not get traditionally published until I was 46 years old. So it was a long, long, long journey.
People always say things like, oh, what a meteoric fast rise you had. Yeah. Like, oh, because all of a sudden it's just like, oh, you got to 3-book deal or whatever.
Yeah. And yeah, they
ignore
like that,
the 26 years before that. 36.
I would like to discuss what a meteor is to them and what they actually think of them.
Slow and painful.
Excruciating and long and full of rejection.
And secretive. And your feelings are hurt all the time. Mm-hmm. And then you're really excited and then nothing happens and you're confused.
And you become a masochist and then you like actually enjoy the pain of all
the I'm not sure I've gotten to the enjoy.
Oh, I know. I'm not at that phase yet.
No.
and
Jennifer even sent me something today earlier that was like the creative process, and some of it is not saved for because we're still early on, so I'm not going to drop certain words, but like one of them's like panic and one's just like crying all the time. None of it was embrace the pain. So I think that your chart needs to be revised, Jennifer. I didn't see that on there.
I know. And frankly, I didn't make that chart, but it did speak to my soul.
Yes.
Of start working. Then there was a swear word.
Yeah.
Then there was panic. Mm-hmm. And then there was deadline crying, doing all
that. Yeah. Oh, deadline crying. So yes, I embraced the pain, and I'm also, I was a freelance editor for other authors until Woman on the Edge came out. So I've been on hiatus since then, and it's been full-time writing since then.
That's the dream.
Yes. And it's,
It's
a great dream, and I know full well that it can be fleeting, and I don't take it for granted at any moment. I just take it step by step. I have two kids. One is my son is almost 16. My daughter is almost 13, and I will be 50 this month. So you can imagine the fun of the hormones in my house.
It's like a perfect storm of adolescence meets early menopause.
Yeah, menopause. And like,
there must be a lot of crying.
I would say it's more rage.
Yeah. I can imagine the rage. And I'm glad you have your she shed to get away from some of this sometimes. I'm very jealous of the she shed because this thing behind me is just a screen. And if my kid comes and hits it, it's down along with it.
On your head. Until December, that is what I had. Was I worked in my very cluttered kitchen for 20 years. Through the pandemic, I wrote both the books that are published during the pandemic, or at least published one and then did that. This is actually such a dream to finally be able to have my own space.
Doors
and windows.
A lock.
It's locked right now.
I'm sorry. This is not a time you can approach me. You'll have to come back during my office.
No. I have friends who are like, can I come over? We'll have a drink in there. No. This is like, I originally thought I'd have people, you know, come in and it'd be like,
this is like your cabana.
It's all my writing I dance in here. I play music really loudly. Right. It's just my home.
I write in like a weird tower room, but it's kind of open. So if I go too crazy up there, A, I'll fall down the stairs. B, my dog comes up because there's no stopping him. And also it's like really close to my husband's office. So if I go like when I'm having the rage cries,
yeah,
I have to do that silently into my hand.
Scream into a pillow.
Exactly. I'm worried because if anybody's seen pictures of Jennifer's house, it clearly is a haunted house with stairs that are not up to any code. And I worry you falling just in the daily up and down.
So don't be in a rage and front of you. And I hold on to the walls as if I'm walking on a boat.
Good.
I feel like on Halloween I might have seen... Did I see your house, a Halloween pic of it, maybe?
Probably.
Yeah, I feel like there's something.
It's like tower
tickling
house,
in my brain.
Dark, we do have a ghost. She's lovely.
I mean, it's very on brand for you, but I still worry about your safety. I mean, your dog's falling down the stairs too, because he's not so balanced sometimes.
That's one of my greatest fears, is falling downstairs, actually.
Yes.
Mine too.
My current work in progress has a bunch of people falling downstairs, and I'm just going to like lean into it. And I'm
a bunch of people.
Really, I should like that while I'm living
here. Or maybe they are not necessarily falling downstairs, but there are deaths and stairs.
Oh, okay, that's even worse. Escalators, too. I get really nervous.
Oh, escalators. No. Escalators terrify me. I've seen those videos.
When I was just in Budapest, and they have the scariest, fastest escalators I've ever seen in my life. And my husband's not scared of them. He just like hopped on and went. And I was like trying to build up the courage, and it was so fast and so steep. But by the time I got down like this really steep thing, I had to take my emergency anxiety medication. I was like, I can't believe you left me up there.
Yeah. I face my fear a lot with the escalators. Made sure, where I'll just, I take a breath and I go down and I can't watch at the bottom. I'm always afraid someone's not going to get off fast enough and I'm going to go careening into them and then I'm going to get caught. We obviously all write dark books.
Yeah.
Because we all our minds go to the same.
Like the second you escalate, I've seen the videos.
It's the flip-flop thing. And I can't even say it. Flip-flop thing where your flip-flop, long sandal gets caught and you go in with it and you die
like
horribly.
Like long pants or a long skirt or
same,
like.
Yeah.
Same.
Any kind of like luggage or scarf.
It's anything that comes together like that, because I heard, I probably shouldn't share this because this is not the right kind of podcast, but the person who died from the Song of the South thing America sings at Disney, where they got pushed between horrible stuff. And these are the kind of things I heard when I was a kid, but I generally don't really write that dark fiction. I leave that to Jennifer.
You write some dark stuff.
Well, yeah, and I blame that on you too. I didn't write dark stuff till I met you, Jennifer.
Is that true?
It kind of is. I mean, okay, so
I'm not going to take the blame for this.
Maybe a little bit. And the reason that she does is because, I have romances out, but I've also always written speculative fiction. And my most recent work definitely is The Darkest. And the reason I blame her isn't specifically her writing, but Jennifer has been more instrumental in attracting authors to come on our show. And then like once we speak to one author in one area, we get, hey, you should talk to so-and-so. And we've had way more dark stuff because of her.
And I'm like, do you write murder books?
And now I'm like, Before we were doing this, I read a little horror, but hardly any. I read some thrillers, but hardly any. And now that's like 80% of what we have on here. And I'm like, well, this is why my brain goes this way. It's all your fault. And she's like, no, it isn't. Like, yes.
Oh, it's such a good community. It is such an amazing community.
The crime and horror community, they're lovely. They're the sweetest, funniest.
Why is this?
Nicest people. Because we try to get it all out in our paper, like, she's like, and then this terrible thing happened, and then you meet somebody and you're like, well, you're just sweet.
Seriously, I mean, I still can't get over how like bright and sunshiny Amanda Giatissa is, and then you read her book and you're like, what the hell is wrong with you, woman?
I haven't had a chance to read Amanda's books. I'm dying to.
You need
her at Thriller Fest last year. I know. I just had so many.
We
on
get
my
it.
TBR plus deadlines. Everyone knows. Like it's, and she knows. Totally. I'm desperate to read her books, but I met her at Thriller Fest last year. She is so lovely. She won last year.
She won my speaker. Yeah, for my speaker, I believe it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yes, she won. And
it doesn't make sense when you have these sunny, lovely people, and then they write the darkest stuff.
Like, so speaking of dark, and we'll say like a little bit twisted, we read Watch Out for Her, which we've got sidetracked. Tell our listeners and our viewers a little bit about your book.
So Watch Out for Her, which came out a year ago, actually, which is, can't believe it's been a whole year. It is, if I would classify what I write, it's so interesting because thriller is the umbrella term. I think I write domestic psychological suspense.
Yes, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's almost a mix of there's like family drama and then there is absolutely psychological suspense and then complicated female relationships in all my books. Women are at the forefront of it always until now. So this story is about Sarah Goldman, who is a mother of a six-year-old boy. He's almost seven. And she's been a stay-at-home mother for, you know, his whole life. And she feels like she's missing that piece of herself, that piece of her identity that belongs only to her. And she wants to return to her first love, which is photography. And so she decides to hire a young babysitter named Holly Monroe for the summer, a 22-year-old medical school student. And at first, it seems like the perfect arrangement. They find something in each other that they're both missing. This mother-daughter relationship where they both feel seen by the other. And they bond very quickly, too quickly.
I was just about to say, I think too quickly.
And
that's
then
like a sure
Sarah,
sign when all of a sudden you're
yes, when you bond that fast.
And you're like, you're my family. You're still on the job interview. Because
they're both so desperate for it. So, but then Sarah, who is a voyeur, not a sexual voyeur, but a voyeur, she sees something that she can't unsee and decides that she needs to get as far away from Holly as possible. So she moves with her family from Vancouver to Toronto, only to show up in their new house and finds hidden cameras everywhere.
And a few other things, which I won't
yeah, spoil what they
were. And a few other things.
Mr.
Blinkers.
Yes. Okay. As a mother of my youngest is seven, who also has a rabbit bunny obsession, I kind of felt like someone had been stalking me to get some of this info. And I'm like,
okay, I love bunnies.
I don't have Ron the rabbit here with me because he's out with my child, but he also has like multiple Rons. Any bunny is ending up named Ron. So I'm just like,
oh, that's easier for everyone.
But it's whatever Ron he's looking for, but it's just they're all named Ron. So it's not like one will replace the other. One of them is hand sewn by my eldest with a drawn on face with a Sharpie, and he's wearing something that he's saying it's an outfit, but everybody's like, is that a diaper? I'm like, I don't know. It's a stuffed rabbit. Don't ask me.
Sorry, that sounds a little bit like a creepy, like serial killer doll.
It could be.
Okay, and it sounds like it's handmade. Like a prompt for a book, all these bunnies named Ron. Like, I just had this,
easily a short story called All These Bunnies Named Ron.
All the bunnies named Ron.
One of them has a demon in it.
All the Ron rabbits.
All of them have demons in it. Sometimes it's kind of worried, but seriously, I totally felt that whole aspect and that age with that little boy. And I'm just like, I feel you, Sarah. I so feel you. Because it was just like,
you're like, I'm tired too.
Well,
hire a hot Holly to come into my house.
Seriously, I am like, I'm happy. I don't care what happens. Just
help me.
Somebody watch my
children. Just let me close the door.
Give me some time. Yeah. Well, and I appreciate that. I'm really glad that it resonated. That part resonated.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm really glad because I was, it's interesting. I people always ask me if I am like Sarah. And I would say that I can be a little high strung.
I'm actually off the curly hair.
It's the curly hair. I'm very chill. Like, I'm a very chill person.
That is something that people that are chill don't ever say. You have to know that.
Children would tell me. They would tell me that. But I'm not an uptight person at all. So it's not that I'm uptight, but I am high strung and I'm definitely a little anxious.
Energetic in it.
Energetic.
like a rabbit.
So in that sense, I did identify with Sarah, but I have worked forever. And when my daughter, my second child, was 1 year old, I started my own business. And that, you know, like I needed that piece of me desperately. I am not built, was not built to stay home full time with my kids. And just, I needed something of my very own. And so it was interesting for me to learn about Sarah and who she is as a person. I think it takes a really special woman or parent to be with their child all the time.
Well, it just makes you insane. So that's just, I mean, it's a given. So, I mean, and
parenting in general.
Yeah, no.
I was gonna say, I don't even have kids. I just have a full-time dog and a mom with dementia.
I was going to say,
oh yeah. So you're a caregiver, so right?
Similar
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. It's like yeah.
The caregiver yeah. thing. And the difference yeah. is like, I have hope for my children to become more independent. And that's not yeah. a hope you're going to have with a dog and with an elderly.
He's parent, never going to learn how to drive a car.
He's not.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah. Or make you dinner.
Or Uber, maybe. He's pretty smart. I can see him like putting a paw down and calling himself a Lyft, getting himself to the
Well, I mean, usually when he smashes onto the keyboard of something, he breaks it.
Yeah, that's not helpful. But yeah, there's a different.
Sorry.
It's okay. You're like.
Yes, as my whole setup starts like slowly falling. No,
it's happened to me during a show where all of a sudden like my light went off and I'm like, oh, I'm in the dark now.
Yeah.
Shake the cord.
Oh, no, I've had that when we had that back-to-back one a couple years ago and the sun was setting, my light was fading and I'm just like, I'm going to be in the complete darkness by the time because I didn't take into account the fact that we were going to be a second hour later and the sun was setting and I'm using daylight. So there we go. But
sorry, while I'm just like adjusting here.
This is the beauty of live TV, everyone.
But I was just going to say, I think the thing is what you capture with Sarah really well is the idea that as a mom, you're always finding that dynamic between who I am as a mother and who I am as a person. And that's a really tenuous thing. And whether there's outside employment or an outside career, like I was an attorney before I had kids. And then I became a stay-at-home mom and was pursuing writing, but not for the first couple of years because I just kept having babies. So it was like, yeah, I have one who's now.
I love that you said that like it was a mystery.
It was a mystery. I don't know where they kept coming from. But no, yeah. I have 3 kids and they're 2.5 years apart. So it's like each one, just when we get a little bit more independent, then a new one would show up. And it wasn't
as if by magic.
Changeling.
I know. But the whole
they're
idea
multiplying like rabbits.
Like rabbits, like Ron the rabbit. No, but I'm very grateful for my mother-in-law because she would be the one who would take my youngest or whoever and be like, yeah, go write for a little bit, get that sanity in, because she knew that there are some people who have the energy and the bandwidth to be like, oh, well, when they go to sleep, and I'm like, that presumes any of my children are sleeping and then yeah. I'm supposed to sleep. But I also have done part-time work and contract work and stuff throughout there. And it's all over the place because there's definitely a different feel of like, I'm doing a little something on the side versus a full-time career that becomes part of your identity. Because before it's like, I was an attorney and my kids, they just don't get that because they never saw that from me. And now they know I have books, but they're also kind of confused by that too. They're like, are you famous? You're on YouTube. I'm like, I'm not famous.
No. You are.
Well,
no, I know what you mean.
Book famous is different than
yeah.
really famous.
I'm an influencer famous.
Oh, I'm definitely yeah. not an influencer.
Yeah. Samantha, Sam, yeah. are you a photographer?
No. I'm definitely an artist through and through, but it's definitely writing, music, dance. I don't
dance?
Play any.
What kind of dance?
Yes. Oh, I was a competitive jazz dancer actually when I was younger. Yeah.
My day job is I'm a professional ballroom dancer.
Are you?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited. I had no idea.
The only dance class I ever took was jazz. So that's the only one I kind of
I love jazz.
Yes.
Pre-pandemic, my husband and I were full-time. We taught, choreographed, and performed 6 to 7 days a week. Now he has a finance job and health insurance, and I teach 2 days a week.
That is so cool.
But it was like the pandemic happened, and we were just like, oh no, we don't have a backup plan at all for our lives besides me going, I'm going to be a writer and a ballroom dancer.
Yeah.
And it was like, I guess it's time to really think about writing.
That's really interesting. You know, as someone who is always in the arts, there's so much I could do online. during the pandemic. So that, of course, it affected me, but I didn't lose my livelihood. And so for someone who your livelihood,
my livelihood was dancing 6 inches away, holding a stranger in my
arms. Yeah. With their like saliva all going in your, in your face. Right.
Yeah.
5, 6, 7, 8 this way.
Exactly. So we were like, huh,
I'm going to have to go check out your videos, but
I'll send you some of the good ones.
Yeah,
and now I'm looking at what you're wearing, Samantha, and I feel like it's very Fosse. And I'm like, you could totally be wearing like top of a jazz outfit, because I think that's what I wore when I was in jazz, and I still have my jazz shoes. I can't do any of it, but I hold on to them in the hope that one day I will dance again. And Jen's like,
I will.
She's threatening to teach me, and I'm like, you don't know how unteachable I am.
Oh my gosh, just it doesn't even matter. Just do it.
Move your body. You're gonna visit me at VoucherCon, and Samantha, Sam, you're gonna be at VoucherCon, or you're gonna be at VoucherCon?
No, I'll be at Thriller Fest, but VoucherCon unfortunately is so close to when my kids go back to school that it's just such chaos.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just crashing it, even though I have no reason to be there. But it's in San Diego. I'm like, I can make that drive, and I'm
and we've never met in person. You two have never met in person.
Mm-hmm. We talk literally every day, even when
you need to both go to Thriller Fest.
Now you're like, I want to meet both of you in person.
It was selfish.
And Jen just forgets that I took my jazz class pass, no pass, because I didn't want it to tank my GPA, because that's how uncoordinated I am. And that's how like hopeless.
Or that's how scared you are.
This is such a competitive jazz dancer thing where you're like,
you just have to. I love jazz.
I mean, that was my first.
Really young, though.
Why did you quit?
I quit jazz young too.
So I quit because of fear. And I was going to say something about so I just discovered bodysuits.
Yes.
That are like the best thing ever. So I think I have like 10 of them. Okay, but I noticed that I flashed everyone my sweatpants that I have, roomy sweatpants.
We all wore bodysuits back when we were in, like I wore them in high school, and it was nice because you could wear one and it would tuck into like a skirt or flowers.
With your overalls.
And for me, I have
docks and my,
but it's still kind of pretend. You know, I didn't ever have docks, but you know, that kind of stuff.
I was a bodysuit, some big terrible '90s jeans, and my Doc Martin boots.
Right,
and that's still how I dress.
Yes, same.
Bodysuits in public bathrooms, but if you're doing overalls, you're already in trouble there because you're like, hold on, get out of.
I don't think I've worn overalls ever. I'm only 5 feet tall. If I wear overalls,
we're the taller people in the room. How did that? We're 5'2".
You're 5'2". You are tall. That is my dream.
Ever bigger. Nobody's ever smaller than us. So we're just
really
shocked. Yeah.
Okay. So then I'll tell you the truth. I'm 5 feet tall with my hair up.
With your like, hold on. If I do this,
I'm like, extra
inch in and a half.
I used to lie on my theater resume and say I was 5'5". Because somebody told me once that I presented with a big enough personality that I seemed taller. So I'm like, I'm going to increase it by 3 inches. That also makes me seem thinner because my weight is on here.
Oh, yeah, that helps.
But I did have one director look at my resume, look at me and go, you're not 5'5". And I'm like, I'm barely 5'2".
But I speak 5'5", and that is what is important.
I speak in 5'5", completely. I mean, and 5'5" is still not even that tall. Like, I wish I could be like, I speak in 5'8", but no, I speak in a neurotic 5'5".
No, that's
like in a really loud 6'2". Like,
and growing up right by Anaheim, you know, I grew up in Anaheim, and my ex-husband who worked for Disney for quite a while, he's like, yeah, you're not tall enough to be one of the princesses, but you might be able to be like Piglet. I'm like,
so this is one of the reasons I quit. There are two reasons I quit dancing, and one was height. I wanted to go to Juilliard. I'd always written. I was always a writer, but I was a dancer, and I wanted to go to Juilliard. And I was told, not by Juilliard or anybody else, but I don't remember who said it, but it was one of those comments that just kind of sticks
destroyed
with you
your soul?
Yeah, destroyed my soul. And someone said, you'll never be tall enough to make it as a professional dancer. And so it stuck with me.
I get this in my soul. Like,
I would like to go rabid raccoon on somebody right now who said that to you. But I mean,
it's also a different like that time. To
yeah.
A different time and led me down a different path. Yeah.
And now this path led you directly to a she shed.
And this path led me to my she shed. And to my such a passionate life. Like I live such a passionate life that I still dance. with my friends, you know, in clubs and stuff. Clubs, can I say clubs? Is that
what I was going to say? Still say clubs.
I don't know.
I'm like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, I don't know if that's what the youngins call it, but that's what I say. Is clubs.
I don't know.
But I still dance and I love music. So it's still a part of me. But the other reason I quit was fear. And it was the last time I let fear stop me. I was asked to do solo at a recital.
It's terrifying.
Such stage fright that before I could do all of that, I quit. And I never danced on a stage again. So it was the very last time when I let anything really stop me from getting what I really love.
The second half of that story. The first half, I think we all relate to a little bit too much. I quit dancing as a child, jazz, tap, ballet, all that stuff. Yes. Because I developed and the bodysuits just were so scary. Oh. And again, I was moved from a group class to a solo class because my breasts were distracting the other people in the class.
What a time we grew up in.
I know. I'm like, oh, the 80s.
It was amazing in so many ways. We have such street smarts and we became so independent.
I know, like we used to like play by the power lines and be like, oh my God, there's
yeah, we would lick the power lines, right?
I remember hearing about like a possible murderer living in the sewer. Of course, this was an urban legend. And my friends and I, two of them are named Holly and Sarah, by the way.
Oh, no way.
We were like, let's find the killer.
Yeah.
Of course we didn't, but we did go like into an open sewer system by the power lines. And I told my parents and they were like, you're going to get cancer for sure.
No, you're not. I mean, my dad took me in a drop basin. It wasn't an open sewer. It's a drop basin. It's different. I know the difference. My mom is still mad that the day that I stayed home from Sunday school, he took me up to a work site and took me into the sewer. But I mean, it was fine. I'm fine. So far,
it was just different times.
It was different, a different time.
Well, you realize that my dad is the one who introduces himself as he makes underground dirty movies, which is true but completely false. Because
I'm sorry, back up. Okay, so can you please?
Yes, no, he works for He works for National Plan Services, which does televising and cleaning of sewer lines.
Allison, that was the biggest like thunk I have ever experienced. That was so deflating. I was really intrigued.
We can rebrand it by, what is the weirdest thing he's ever found underground? Like bones?
Stuff, like we've there seen, we go. You know.
It could be rebranded.
Mostly it'll appear in the Ron Rabbit story. Yes. Which is gonna be a series.
Well, that's when you take it to when they've done stuff at Disneyland and everything they find in the bottom of the water, everything tourists drop, which is mostly just cameras. But you want it to be something really like worth like a child.
Wow.
One that got stuck in an animal.
So I'm dark, but
sorry.
Children and animals. I will hint at the danger, but I don't know if I could actually on the page do. I don't know.
That doesn't faze me at all.
See,
children. I think teenagers are okay.
Teenagers are fine. After game. I've heard. You know, what's funny, I was talking to my agent the other day and she was like, you know, we were talking about a project I have out in the world. And I break one of those rules-ish, but not on the page. And she's like, well, it's not like you killed a dog. And I'm like, I know.
I don't think it's a rule. I think it's just
being polite.
Every person's own,
thresholds. And I will say your agent has a zero tolerance of any kind of hurt for a dog.
Because as she should.
Is. But that's who she is. And that's not universal. Like every agent is going to.
Exactly.
Paula's going to say that.
But I mean, I love that Samantha just said like, well, everybody has their bar. Because like.
Everyone has their bar.
I read a lot of horror. And you know, horror can be pretty darn triggering.
I read thrillers, mystery, horror. I can't do because it scares me too much.
Well, I'm going to say like, you could read, I'm always like, you could read my horror. Cause my horror is for people who are too scared of horror.
Yeah.
It's just personally.
Gory, I have like a gory limit too.
No.
No. And yours is gothic. So there's like different, there's different things. And I'm not into like the slasher kind of horror either. So like, I think sometimes people hear horror and they go to what their scariest thing is. And it's really not that. And I mean, we've read so many things that like certain horror has really gotten to me. Like I still, every time I have a chance to throw Josh Malerman under the bus as why I can't eat pork anymore after reading Pearl, that one triggered me in a way that I did not expect.
And you're so triggered by it that it's the one thing that he's written that I haven't read.
I know. I'm sorry. And I
have a signed copy behind me. Yeah. And I'm like, I can't read that book. No, it's going to scare me too much.
I know. And it's so interesting. It's the psychological for me that I really love, especially to write about. Yes. But I think I get triggered. So, and I love Stephen King, but I was, when I was about 18, I backpacked through Europe for a few months and lived in Israel and for a few months. And I got severe bronchitis and I would be up all night and I'd be coughing and coughing so much I couldn't sleep. And where I was living, they had like all the Stephen King books up until that time. And so I read them all, one after the other, after the other.
So now it's super tied with like you being sick.
But it was also that I think reading so many, any sound, like now, like I would hear when my kids were little, I'd hear the clash of the cymbals in there. Like I would take them to these monkey baby music classes. That was it. And instantly I'd be like,
no, that monkey shines.
Those were already scary before he got anywhere near them. Those things are terrifying and they're
all. Yeah.
We had one of those growing up in my basement.
Oh,
I don't know why my dad had one and he knew I was scared of it. And sometimes he'd call me down to the basement to like help him carry something up and he'd like lurch out with the monkey.
Okay. Oh my God. Oh, so he did it to scare you.
He did.
This is the same thing. We had a family friend.
I'm like, oh my God. And I fell for it every time.
Yeah. Well, that's just
it. I fell for these things every
time. Because you trusted him.
Yeah. Because I was a child.
Well, we had a family friend who had this Scandinavian troll doll. So I'm not talking to little trolls that are naked, but like made of beads and wood and absolutely terrifying. And whenever I go over to the house, they knew I was scared, so they'd put it away. But then, of course, my older sister and the younger brother, who they were friends, would always find ways to like hide it someplace and be like, oh, Allison, go get the board games out. No, I'm not going over there. No, there's nothing in there. I knew, and yet they'd get me every single time. And then open up, there's the troll doll every time.
And then you have that fear of anticipation, that awful feeling in your chest that you're like that dread where you know it's coming.
Oh, well, yeah. But see, my sister was like the king of doing this, Stephen King. She tried to get me to read King stuff for years and I refused. I'm like, you're the reason I'm scared of everything. So you
and
can't
for the record, this so is the sister though. That Allison always says that I remind you of your sister.
Yes.
That we are the same.
You're very, very similar.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack.
The one where we would watch the Muppet Show, and she knew I was scared of the biggest, like the full size Muppets that had people inside, mostly because they had a tendency to eat the guests whole, and I've seen that happen. And so
I'm sorry, on the show,
Muppet Show.
And so whenever the opening would come out, I would not watch when that part came out, and I was too dumb to get that the musical cue should tell me. I was too young to figure that out. So be like, tell me when that part's over. And she would always tell me it was over right when it was coming out. So I'd do that. And every time she got me. So my gullibility is second to none. And her ability to get me every single time. Again. Yeah.
But has that changed?
Yeah. I mean, the gullibility, no. That's still, I'm terrible. But in terms of like my tolerance for scary is much, much higher because I've read this stuff. And there are the people who we call them like the gateway writers, where it's like, well, this is, you know, The Stand is not really horror.
Yeah, I feel like my horror is gateway horror, where it's like, it's just a ghost.
Yeah, I think gateway horror, and it's, there's different, and it's funny, there's certain books that are described as horror that Baby Teeth by Zoe Stage, which, oh my God, I loved it. I loved it so much. And I've seen it described as horror. And I was like, okay, if that's considered horror, that's my kind of horror. Then that.
What
kind of
horror would you call it? What is that? Because I
would have called it a thriller, I think.
Okay.
But I guess with, you know, all these terms are so confusing and they really kind of put us in these boxes that make it hard. And I understand
you're marketing. Speaking our language.
Yeah. And I understand for marketing and I understand when people are looking for something specific. It does help, but it does narrow us because our books can be so many different things.
Yeah.
Yes. And it also builds expectations that, you know, we don't want to disappoint anyone. So we're not exactly sure how do I describe this so that you won't really
know. I'm going to start crying.
Yeah, well,
no, or, it's, you know, absolutely true. And like a lot of it, if you get into the whole, okay, so you take the realm of speculative fiction, and I've seen so many different Venn diagrams trying to explain what speculative fiction is, because very few speculative fiction authors stay really inside one circle without overlapping anything else. And and then you have thriller, which is adjacent to horror, and horror isn't speculative. I mean, thrillers aren't speculative unless they are. So it's like generally they don't have that speculative element, so they stay out of the speculative fiction realm. And that's where those two get too close, because like the minute it's like, oh, it's a crime, but committed by a ghost. Okay, now it's a horror, because now you're in speculative fiction. But if there's no supernatural element, it's not horror. But does horror always have a speculative element? It doesn't.
No. This is, you know, it's, and this is why I feel like marketing people and publicity people, they are working really hard to be the best that they can possibly be for writers, for anybody.
Oh my gosh, it's the hardest job. And like, the landscape changes, and the you know, audience changes, and then the reach changes, and how the medium changes. So
And what people want next. And of course, we all know how slow the process is. So it's like everybody's like a mind reader. It's like, well, what are people going to want 2 years from now?
Oh gosh. Yeah.
I mean, I'm reading something, you know, whatever. Like, I'm reading something and it's hot right now, but
that's why you can never try to write to a trend or
And it's so hard, because and you might get told, oh, well, what you have right now isn't what they're looking for, but you never really know, because who knows what the next trend is going to be. So sometimes it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, I personally have been told, don't write X, editors don't want it. And then come back and been told, write X, this specific editor wants it. After being told, don't write it. I mean, that's literally happened to me based on, oh, people don't want, oh, people do want, because no one really knows until you get told, yes, I'm specifically looking for it. But if you don't have that book ready, you can't go write it now, because by the time you get it done, no longer want it.
That which I think that the beauty of like writing with your own voice, your own writer's voice, is that hopefully you just find the audience that likes your voice.
Yes, I think, and that's it. I actually think I write really voice-driven books.
Which is so funny, because like you talk to people and it's like, it's all about voice. And people are like, what is voice? And everybody's like,
you can't describe it.
No, you'll know it. You'll know. It's like, you'll know it when you read it. What is it to fall in love? You'll know it when you feel it.
You know it when you feel it. You know it when you see it. And it's really hard, because then you have to then convince an editor or an agent of your voice versus something that they can say on a line pitch.
It's interesting. I don't know if I wouldn't say convince, because I think that while everyone wants that deal and everyone wants the agent, what you truly want is someone who believes in you.
Yes.
And believes in the potential of your voice. It doesn't necessarily mean that what you've handed them. My agent, Jenny Bent, my agent, when she first saw Woman on the Edge, you know, we then spent 3.5 years revising it together.
3.5 years?
3.5 years. Now, mind you, that was in the time when Trump became president. And
don't remind
me. I'm so sorry. But it was such a hard time for anyone to focus, but also, and then, you know, she gives it back to me, I give it back to her. So it wasn't like, I would say probably though 2 years between all the wait times, probably a good 2 years where we just went back and forth and back and forth, because she believed in my voice and she believed in the story that I wanted to tell.
And I love hearing that so much.
Oh, she is absolutely incredible.
Like I got signed with my agent, Paula Mounier, who I absolutely love.
She reps my friend Eileen Googe, who just got a fantastic deal and who is one of my best friends in the entire world.
I love that. So I got signed with Paula because based on a book that I was self-publishing, she was just like, I love your voice. Let's figure something out. So then I spent, you know, time writing a book, and it's out into the universe, but it's a weird process because we only ever hear about the exciting things where it's like, I got signed. I went out.
Oh,
on submission.
Sub is the worst.
Sub is the worst thing.
It's the worst.
Right. No, but we usually only hear about the people who literally, they announced they had an agent and 2 minutes later, I have a 3-book deal. And that is so
like at auction.
Common. Yeah, at auction. Yeah. That's the exception, not the rule, but that's what everybody remembers because it is exciting. It's not the normal pace of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think things are more honest. I think, you know, for a long time, we were told, I think, don't talk about these things, not because it was this like big guarded secret, but because you have to be careful who has your book when you're on sub, who is, mm-hmm. is, you know, just all of these things. And I think the pandemic has made us all more able to talk about how we really feel and more able to express, you know, what's difficult, yeah. and what we need to reach out for support with. Yes. I think that was actually a plus. Say,
on the other hand, is like, this is where I'm getting my support. So like, we always like, we love to yes. hear from authors who are just like, my agent believed in me.
Yeah.
And worked with me. And I think, yeah. you know, your agent did that. My agent's doing that for me. Allison's agent's doing that with her. Like, we're all in like, yeah. like, it's just, it's what we as authors want is a cheerleader, somebody yeah. who yeah. reads your words and says, I believe in this.
Yeah. And yes. having been there, because I am on my second agent, it isn't yeah. always like that.
I'm on Jenny. Yeah. I'm on my second agent too.
Yeah. And I think sometimes, especially because there is such a power imbalance. We're afraid to say anything if things aren't working out with your agent, or people are like, there aren't that many agents to go around. I'm going to take whatever I'm offered, even if it's maybe not the best fit, or there isn't a good communication or rapport. And that's really hard too, because people are like, well, you have an agent, stop complaining. But it's like, okay, but if they're derailing my career or not being that cheerleader, that voice of support, then that's something that we need to address as well. You know, not all agents are created equal, and they're not all good fits for people.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Talk about that, you know, and yes. even good relations between authors and editors, and having that editor who gets your voice, and you're like, that's so
I have been true. So lucky. Oh my gosh, both mm-hmm. the editors for my first two books, and now my editor, I have a different editor on A Friend in the Dark, coming out in 2024 with Thomas and Mercer. There's my plug. But
that's really okay. I'm like, oh, who's your editor?
Who's the editor? And yes. when is it coming out?
Well, so Megha Parikh acquired my book. Mm-hmm. And then Heather Lazar is the developmental editor on it. And anyway, it's just been absolutely phenomenal experience.
Thomas and Mercer, we interview a lot of people who have been with, are there.
Yeah.
They're like, just... It's going to be great.
It's
going to be awesome.
2024, but when in the year? Like,
I'm going to say, I think early 2024. I'm in edits now, developmental edits now. And I will say also my experience with my publisher on Woman on the Edge, and watch out for her, Simon Schuster Canada, was also an absolutely exquisite, exceptional experience. Truly, truly, I've been very lucky.
Oh, and just getting back to Canada, you mentioned Trump. I'm sorry that our poison reached up to you, because I was just like, when Trump was
Toronto's very close to the United States.
You're not even our country. That is a problem, but I guess, yeah.
Toronto is where...
we have our own stuff.
Yeah, you've got your own stuff, but that you are really what was like... all of our, like, if we have to get over the border,
we were all coming
to Toronto.
Yes.
Actually,
I'm probably going to Vancouver.
No, I'm so close to Mexico. I just want to get on that way.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Where it's warmer.
You were saying earlier,
it rains and rains for 3 weeks. I want to go back to something you said, because it was really interesting. And I think when it comes to taking, you know, that first offer or being so mm-hmm. afraid, we as authors are generally always desperate. Always.
Oh, yeah.
At every mm-hmm. stage of this. Every stage, we're desperate. We're desperate to get an agent. Wow. First, we're desperate to write the book. We're desperate to get an agent. We're desperate to get a deal. We're desperate for anybody to read it. We're desperate for people to like it. We're desperate to get sales, and we're desperate to get another deal. Mm-hmm. So it's desperation, and that kind of desperation is really frightening. And so, yes, talking about it. That's what I was saying before. The thriller community, really, everyone is so supportive and open and helpful and kind. And we really just come together and, not only do we celebrate each other, but we commiserate with each other. We have to give each other, you know, ideas if something's not working out, alternative routes. We give each other the real situation of what goes on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really important to find, I think, your community from the very, very beginning.
Yeah. And I've been in groups of authors on sub at various points, and that really helps there too, because it is something where you see there's a lot on Twitter about being in the query trenches, but everything goes dark when you go on sub and no one wants to hear about it. Nobody can talk about it. So everything's very hush hush, which is why it's been a sanity saver for me to have those people who are like,
amazing.
Okay. And then cheering each other on, and then, you know, having to have the threat of back in the query trenches as those of us,
yeah,
agents or get dumped by agents or agents die of all things, like lots of uncertainties. Yeah. So it so helps to have people who are like, we're here for you. We'll do a positivity pass, whatever you need. We're here to cheer you on.
And positivity pass. I am a pure masochist when it comes to my work before it's published. So I
love, like, please tell me how terrible it
apart.
Is.
Pardon?
Like, you're like, just please tell me how terrible it is.
Yeah, I want someone to tell me so I can.
I want
it.
You to X out every page.
Yeah, I do. I love it. I love the red
start
lines.
Over.
I love. Done. I love it.
I'm just gonna tell
so
you what
much.
I hate about it instead of what I like about
well,
it.
And that's why,
that is a very kind of like cold weather mentality though, yes. Because like I'm from New England and that's like how we treat everybody. Like my poor dance students are always like, you never say anything nice about my dance frame. And I'm like, oh, your elbows are fine. Let's make it better.
I would say I'm a kind, as an editor, I'm kind, but very honest. My friend Meredith Shore, who writes rom-com, we're each other's critique partners. Amazing rom-coms if you love them. We're critique partners.
But Allison's
says,
like, what?
I was going to say, I'm like, Anne, would she like to come on my show sometime?
Her second book, as someone just like you, Sarah, I'll plug anyone. But is coming out July 7th, I want to say. I may have the date wrong, but it's out in July.
Soon.
Yes, As Seen on TV is her first.
Okay.
But she says,
great
title. She calls me a brutal, brutal editor with a big heart.
But you need that because you know what? You don't want your book, baby, facing the world with like stuff on its face, right?
No, and I would never do that to somebody I love.
Oh, this book still has spinach in its teeth. You don't want to be that person.
Mm-hmm. Hey, at least it ate its spinach. That's a healthy diet.
I love this. Sam, you've been incredible.
Thank you. So have you.
We loved having you. Everybody,
we still want to go visit your she shed, even if
we're going to. I know.
I will let you knock on the door.
We'll just peek in the windows when you're not there. You can stand behind us and watch us take pictures.
I need to get you two together. I find it absolutely ridiculous that you haven't met. I understand, like, pandemic and things are busy and it's not easy to travel.
Children and opposite coasts.
And
every time
coasts.
I go on vacation, I go to Europe.
But you need to do that. I do just one last thing, and I'm sorry. I do a writer's retreat every year with 6 other authors, including Eileen Gooch, at a beach house. This is what you guys need to do. So those authors, that's like, we've been doing it for 9 years. You guys need to have a writer's retreat. Just
we
an
do.
Idea.
Oh my God, we can invite.
And can your kids watch my kids? Do they babysit? Because I'm happy.
Yes.
Sam's the expert at babysitting. She wrote an entire book about how good babysitters.
Did you read
the
book, Jennifer?
She was a great babysitter.
She was. Yeah.
She is. Yes.
Way more interest. Like, let's go look for stuff. I'm like, yeah, you go. Do
Well, in terms of babysitting, well, I would just give you, I'll give you a bunch of like cameras and then.
Oh, children.
Thank you, everybody who watched us live, who's watching us on the replay. Make sure to hit like and subscribe, leave a rating, do whatever you want to do. Just leave a comment about like how cute Sam is with her like curly blonde hair in her she shed.
I was going to ask how you get your curls so shiny, but we'll discuss another time.
We'll talk about that after we go live, because I would talk about it forever and nobody wants to hear it. And also they're not shiny. Stay tuned. Our next interview next week, maybe the week after, I have to look at the calendar, which I don't have in front of me because I'm not wearing my glasses, is Sarah Stewart Taylor.
That's awesome.
I know. I'm like, isn't that great? All right, but we will see you all either next week or the week after. Or you'll see our posts on Vox Vominous
Facebook
page.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Bye.